Thanks for having me. I hope you didn't have to give up your decade worth of draft picks to get me on the show.
No. We're good because we always draft in a low spot anyway because we're pretty good. So let's get to the Harden trade. First of all, just your general impression as to how this four-team deal panned out, especially with Harden going and being reunited with Durant.
Crazy. I mean, we could see it coming for months, right? But the way that it went down and the fact that it involved four teams and Victor Oladipo was included mm-hmm. in the deal, it just goes to show that, and I don't know that this is a good thing either, that the disgruntled star always wins in the NBA. And James Harden made it extremely uncomfortable in Houston, and they had to go ahead and pull the trigger just to salvage their season. There's a sad part about this, but most people are going to be focused on the fact that Brooklyn has these three megastars and these three very strange people and super egos all on the same roster, and how is it going to work?
That was really well put, because that's exactly right. And you did hit on something that was going to be my next question, and I'll continue as a follow-up, and that is the ability of the star to force their way to a destination they want to be in. Anthony Davis essentially did the same thing. What is it about the power of the star in this league that no other star seems to have in another league?
Well, I mean, for one, one great player, one truly elite player, and there's only really about eight of them in the NBA, but one of those guys always puts you in the hunt. At least for the playoffs. And so the importance of that guy is tremendous, and he holds an incredible amount of power. I would argue that the way that franchises treat those guys, they coddle them way too much, and it only intensifies their sense of entitlement. I don't think that's always a great thing for the league. I think the best scenarios is when you get a Tim Duncan, but you also have a Greg Popovich coaching him and a David Robinson mentoring him. And even though that guy has a tremendous amount of power and importance to your organization, he's just the number one piece. He's not the be-all, end-all. And I think a lot of this is indicative of just how poorly franchises are built and how poorly they operate, that they have to create a savior out of someone who should be a franchise player, but who shouldn't be the entire franchise. I think that's the heart of it. That's how they acquire so much power, because they have so much importance, because their franchises don't know what to do besides lean on them.
Is there a concern in your area that the blueprint that was seen for Anthony Davis, the blueprint we just saw for James Harden, could be a blueprint for Bradley Beal exiting?
Yes, and he's a different kind of personality, but I think when these guys get fed up, they know exactly what they need to do to get out of there. And their agents are advising them, if you want to go, you're going to have to make life difficult. You're going to have to make it so that they can't get anything done as long as you're on the roster. And it gets more and more troubling. Remember how we were all freaking out over the way Anthony Davis and Rich Paul and Clutch Management handled that situation.
Right.
James Harden's situation was way more diabolical. I mean, he was going to gentlemen's clubs and just blatantly violating protocols. Not to mention, how much weight did he gain in the shortest offseason in NBA history?
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing the short period of time suddenly out of nowhere he packed on some LBs fast.
Yes, it was amazing. And then, they're not the greatest team in the world, and they weren't going to win a championship.
Right.
But Houston did do some interesting things there. John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins, now that those guys are healthy, you add Christian Wood. You still have guys like P.J. Tucker. That was very much a team that was a playoff team and probably a number four to number six seed if they played to their potential. And he just had no interest in even helping them, no interest in even competing for their new coach. And I think that was just it spoke very poorly of Harden. who's one of the all-time great players already at age 31 that we've ever seen in the NBA. But it just speaks really poorly of him. And now that he's in Brooklyn and reunited with Kevin Durant and has Kyrie Irving, if Kyrie Irving even cares about playing basketball anymore, it puts a tremendous amount of pressure on him to do more than just win. I mean, if they're not in the finals against the Lakers, it was a failed season. And if they don't come at least come close to a championship while they're together, what was this whole experiment worth? I mean, the stakes are tremendously high, not just for the Nets, but for those stars individually, but in particular for James Harden, who just took a situation and took a franchise that had been nothing but good to him and burned the bridge like we've never seen any star burn it. And we've seen plenty of stars burn bridges in this so-called player empowerment era.
What kind of pressure, in your opinion, Jerry, is there now on a rookie head coach and Steve Nash to manage this?
Tremendous. And he's fortunate that, on one hand, that he has Mike D'Antoni, his former coach, right there as his associate head coach.
Exactly.
However, we know one thing. We know Mike D'Antoni's won a lot of games and produced a lot of great offenses, but he's never won the big game. He's never gotten to the finals. And that's how he's going to be measured. And it's just, I mean, from a basketball standpoint, this is a tremendous challenge for a first-year head coach. But from a management of these personalities, it's an impossible task even for Phil Jackson.
Yeah.
If he came back and coached the Nets. And so that's not the kind of soft landing that we often see for new head coaches. But that's why Steve Nash took this job, because he could win immediately, and now the burden is on him.
Well, in part two, they also play and have to play the way Steve Nash didn't play. Steve Nash was about getting the ball to everybody else.
Yeah.
And then if I need to make a shot, I'll make a shot. It's my turn. He doesn't have any players like that on his roster, does he, that plays the way he plays?
Now, I think you could argue that Durant is capable of playing in any style. His versatility and his efficiency as a player reminds you of Nash, but he's not a point guard.
Right.
He's a seven-footer. And
I
don't think that he can be the glue element on your team. He's your best player.
Yeah.
He's also not the leader. He's not the leader that, say, LeBron is, in that, like, you know that when you play on a team with LeBron, it's his team, and he is going to impose his will on the entire situation, which makes everybody fall in line and creates a scenario in which LeBron is kind of the beacon. Kevin Durant has always been, I'm me, I'm going to do me, and I'm going to chill. That's what his Twitter what his Twitter bio says, and,
yep,
and that's how he plays. And so you need somebody else to kind of be that beacon. You know, Steph Curry was the beacon,
yep,
but LeBron, but KD was the best player. I don't know what the connective tissue on that team is. We've never seen anything quite like this. And I make this point, for trios to work, one guy always has to accept being the third guy. Chris Bosh, Ray Allen in Boston.
Yep.
Klay Thompson, who is,
yes,
a great third guy. And let's take it even further back to the Lakers of the 80s. James Worthy.
Oh, yes.
Maybe the greatest number three type in NBA history. Big game James. He always rose to the occasion when you needed him, similar to what Klay Thompson has done in modern times.
Dennis Johnson with the Celtics.
Yes. You know, those guys that they're going to make sure the wheels don't fall off. If you need them to score 30, they'll score 30.
Yep.
If you need them to play a game across the board, they'll play a game across the board. They're always efficient in what they do. Who is that for the Nets? Kyrie Irving is their third best player, but Kyrie Irving requires more maintenance than Kevin Durant and James Harden combined. And it's not like James Harden and Kevin Durant are low maintenance guys.
The Jersey Turnpike needs less maintenance. Okay. All right, then Kyrie Irving. If you're the Milwaukee Bucks, what's your thought process today after seeing this?
I mean, I think you're saying, oh, damn.
Yeah.
Like, if that, you still have possibly chemistry on your side in that your pieces fit better.
Yes.
I know they made some big moves in the off season, but this is a best, you know, a best and the most stars win when everybody has their head on right in the postseason. And Milwaukee is looking at a team that has, you know, in Brooklyn that has two top five players and one top 15 player.
Right.
They look at it and they counter with Giannis, the two-time MVP, one top five player. And then in Chris Middleton, you've got a top 20, top 25 guy, really good player,
mm-hmm.
but not James Harden to your Kevin Durant. And then you've got in Drew Holiday, a great winning, ferocious defensive competitor who can score, but he's not exactly Kyrie Irving. He's more maybe a top 30 type of player, and they have to take a look, and they have to, you know, if there's any opportunity to add another star, maybe it's a Bradley Beal, you know, that they got to take a look at that, because on talent alone, you can no longer consider them a favorite. You can consider them at best a 1B on paper. And let's not forget that you're looking at the Sixers, who have more star power on their roster than you do. The Celtics have more star power, if they're healthy,
yes.
on their roster than you do.
That's right.
It has gotten incredibly difficult for the Bucks. They really seem like a team that their window was the last 2 years, and they didn't make to the finals in that window, and now they're in trouble.
Victor Oladipo was growing increasingly uneasy in Indiana. What kind of rebirth can Houston be for him?
We'll see. It seems like Victor Oladipo's end game is to get to Miami. If Miami
yeah.
can finagle the cap space, and maybe he takes a little bit of money next summer, I still think that's an odd fit with the way that they're going. They're an interesting kind of redeem team in Houston. John Wall had to come off of a ruptured Achilles, and then you've got Victor Oladipo coming back from a major injury. DeMarcus Cousins coming back from two major injuries. They still look like a playoff team to me, and maybe even as high as a number six seed, and that could be a dangerous out if those guys are healthy and explosive. And I think Victor Oladipo needs to seriously consider re-signing in Houston if things go well. But it seems like the Rockets thing is, let's remain as competitive as we possibly can as we sketch out how to rebuild. And that's probably not going to be great for Oladipo. It's weird that he goes to a homecoming, going back to where he played college,
right.
and everything was good until he got injured.
Right.
And I think he got a little jealous of the fact that that is now Sabonis' team, and he needs to play a little bit more of a role. He's not good enough to be someone who is going to be able to make it his own show. And so he has to figure out what's going to make him happy. And that's the problem in this era of just player mobility in the NBA. Some guys just move because they think it's the it thing to do,
right.
as opposed to really considering what's best for them.
One final question, Jerry, and I really appreciate your time. Football and basketball are obviously different, but something that makes the NFL universally popular, besides the fact that it's football, is there is a parody to it, to steal the Pete Rozelle word. In the NBA, there's haves and a lot of have-nots. What is the health of the league, in your opinion? Maybe it's just healthy to have haves, but to have so many have-nots, is that a problem?
It can be. It's something that you have to watch out for. And I think if Golden State had continued on, they probably would have won a third championship. Let's say Durant and Thompson don't get hurt,
right.
and they all decide to stay together. I mean, we might be talking about a team that had won four straight and nobody had really touched them. I mean, I think that becomes a bit of a concern. But the NBA is about drama. It's about the soap opera element. It's about what the personalities are doing.
Yes,
and it's about, there are always in between dynasties, it seems, in that league, and it's been able to prosper in that way for some reason. I don't believe in forced parity, and one thing that concerns me about the NFL is I think too often the parity is legislated as opposed to something that's natural.
That's
but
true.
It's a balancing act trying to figure it all out. And there have been seasons in which there have been dominant dynastic teams in both of those leagues that were awfully compelling. And then there's been seasons in the NFL that have had great parity, but they haven't been as compelling as we would have thought. So there always needs to be a standard. But the biggest thing I would say is that you have to think that you're seeing excellence. And there has to be enough teams chasing excellence, even if it's not the largest potential number, for there to be some kind of a drama. And that's kind of how you balance it and determine whether you have enough parity or you don't. But it's always very tricky. And sports fans, because we're allowed to be, are incredibly fickle. And it's always a matter of, well, not exactly what the situation is. It's how does it look and how does it feel, and do the stars evoke enough emotion or provoke enough emotion for us to really be intrigued? That always comes down to the question. That always is the question it comes down to. And it's fascinating. And I think too much of one thing we get bored with, and so we always need every 5 years ago for there to be some shift.
Fun and fascinating conversation for me. I really enjoyed it, Jerry. Thanks so much for your perspective.
Oh, anytime. I appreciate you.